صلوات محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين صلوات حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل. On behalf of Hayat 360, which is the Women's Auxiliary to Muslim Congress, we'd like to welcome you to the Family Affairs Workshop. My name is Safiya Abdullah. I work with Hayat 360, and our esteemed panelists are Sheikh Amin Rastani, who I will introduce later, and Sheikh Abbas Abiyah, who I will introduce later. Inshallah. We did a topic on Family Affairs Workshop because the basis of every society is the family. And if you have a society with a strong family, you have a strong society. If you have a society with a moral family, you have a moral society. If you have a society that has a respectful family, you have a respectful society. And so our family affairs are the essence of everything. I used to be in the Black Panther Party before I became Muslim. And many of the Panthers, left as a revolutionary group, if you don't know it, Google it. Many of the Panthers left and became Muslim. And the reason they became Muslim is because while they wanted to see a change in society, they realized that to change society, you had to change a moral value. You had to have morals, values, and virtues in order to have a strong society. Without a strong individual, you cannot have a strong family. Without a strong family, you cannot have a strong society. So when you look at the essence of what we have, the foundation, the building bricks of our society deals with the family. So the issues of family affairs are very vast and very important, and way too vast to cover in an hour seminar. We could do a weekend seminar, a week-long seminar, and not be able to properly address all the issues it takes with dealing with the family. However, we do have some of the best people to address those issues. I have Sheikh Amin Rastani. He grew up in Maryland, moved to Qom, and started in the Hausa in 1999. Very knowledgeable brother on so many different levels. Then we have Sheikh Abbas Abiyah, who we all know. He lived in Seattle. 15 years of housing level education. Came from Pakistan, but he's been here for 18 years. And he's a resident imam of the Zainab Center. Now for us, it was important to select panelists that had lived in this country, because the issues that we suffer in our families are twofold. One, they're basic issues that you will find in any country. But we have more difficulties living in the West. We have no Islamic judicial system to address these issues. And so the way we handle them, we have to turn to our ulama. So it was important to find people who knew the situation of the West, who knew what people were going through. So I don't want to take up any more time. The way we set it up is that each of our esteemed scholars will give a short address, 10, 15 minutes. Then we're going to open it up to questions and answers. I do ask that if you have an individual wrong lights, if you could cut those down up there and turn the other ones on, please. If you have an individual specific problem, as opposed to a general question, please try to save those for after the workshop, because we only have an hour. And those tend to get more complicated, and exchange is going back and forth. So with no further ado, I'm going to open up the microphone for Sheikh Abbas Abiyah. Bismillah.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين والدعوة الدائمة على أعدائهم أجمعين. I'd like to thank the Hayat 360 team team had Sister Amira Nelson and Sister Sophia and all the rest of the volunteers of this team who are working really hard and have arranged all these programs and this workshop as well. And may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give them the reward for all these great services. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Rum, verse 21, وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ أَنْ خَلَقَ لَكُمْ مِنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ أَزْوَاجًا لِتَسْكُنُوا إِلَيْهَا وَجَعْلَ بَيْنَكُمْ مَوَدَّةً وَرَحْمَةً إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَآيَاتٍ لِقَوْمٍ يَتَفَكَّرُونَ. And one of his signs is that he created mates for you from yourselves, that you may find comfort in them, and he put between you love and compassion. Most certainly, there are signs in this for people who think. So, in these 10 or so minutes, I intend to talk about the general concept of marriage in principle and some of the fundamental principles that govern this relationship. Obviously, these are more like bullet points, and the time is not sufficient to elaborate. You can ask him any questions if you may have, inshallah. But it's definitely a very elaborate subject, worth a workshop for hours or days. The first thing to keep in our minds is that marriage is not unholy. It's not against the spirituality, as some religions have thought and promoted celibacy. In Islam, it's a worship and ibadat of Allah. As believers, we do everything for the sake of Allah. And the prime purpose of ours is to marry qurbatan ilallah, for the sake of achieving the pleasure of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The second, there are several benefits which we learn in the light of various ahadith and authentic narrations from the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. I would mention just a few of those. First is the protection of our half of the religion. Some of the narrations teach us that majority, Akthar al-Nar al-Uzzab, majority of the people in the hellfire are singles. So marriage is a protection for our spirituality. The first thing that we as believers think at any intersection of our life is that what impact this thing has on my soul. So because in Islam we are soul-centered individuals, so marriage is a major factor in protecting our spirituality, our chastity, our izzat and dignity in the society. Not just in this world, but also in the hereafter. It's a very helpful factor. The second important benefit is getting our elevation spiritually, getting elevated. The worships that we perform in Islam, the same 2 rakats of prayers that I would do otherwise as a single, has much lesser reward as compared to the same 2 rakats of prayers I would do as a married person. You find 70 times of the reward mentioned in some of those narrations. So our worships and spiritual highness is increase in the reward of our worships, and the spiritual highness is the second benefit. The third benefit is the increase in our material sustenance. Lack of financial status financial resources should never be a reason for a person to delay in the marriage, because Allah has already promised in the Holy Quran, إِن يَكُونُوا فُقَرَاءَ يُغْنِهِمُ اللَّهُ مِنْ فَضْلِهِ اللَّهُ وَاسِعٌ عَلِيمٌ. If they are poor, Allah will make them rich from His fadl. So it's confirmed that marriage increases in our sustenance. And above all, closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We become close to Allah through the marriage. Like I said, a lot has to be said about each of these points, but I'm not going to go into details intentionally because of the time constraint. The second bullet point, which is very important to be emphasized when we discuss the marriage as a concept, is that there is no room for equality in Islam. I remember when Ayatollah Khamenei, hafizahullah, was the president and he came to the United Nations, New York, to deliver his speech. He said in his speech that we do not believe in equality, because Islam believes in something superior than equality, and that is justice. Our youth, our elders need to keep this point in mind, that the Western style of equality is not the solution for our problems, and let us not try to mix up those ideas with Islamic values. A mixture is not going to work. We believe in the pure Islam and the pure teachings of Allah in its original form. Sometimes justice may dictate equal treatment of both the genders in some of the instances. In those instances where Islam is treating both genders with equality, it's not because Islam believes in equality, it's because justice dictates equal treatment in those cases. So the rule and the principle will not break. So please keep that in mind, that we believe in justice. Equality will make two husbands in one household, which we are talking about the skyrocketing rate of divorces, which we are witnessing in the society, and several other problems which are not, which could have been avoided if the divine justice phenomena and the social justice phenomena of Islam was properly understood and implemented. The third bullet point I want to mention is the pillars of marriage. In Islam, marriage is a holy institution, a contract, a relationship established on pillars of respect, trust, and love. Now, respect is something which is achieved and acquired with our actions. Husband has to respect the wife. Wife has to respect the husband. There is no room and no license to anyone to disrespect. Every believer has a high respect, higher than the Holy Kaaba. You must have heard the famous hadith from Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, al-mu'minu a'zamu hurmatan min al-Kaaba. Al-mu'min is greater in respect than the Kaaba. Another hadith says, al-mu'minatu a'azzu min al-mu'min. A believing woman is more dignified and honorable than a believing man. And al-mu'minu a'azzu min al-kibrit al-ahmar. And the believing man is more honorable than al-kibrit al-ahmar, which is the name of a rarely found mineral in the mountains. So a believing man is more honorable than that mineral which is rarely found, and a believing woman is even further more mu'azzaz, respectable, dignified than a believing man. So that dignity has to be protected. That's the respect that we have to practically do something to respect and show respect and never disrespect each other. The pillar of love is achieved by, from the woman's side, is achieved through the obedience of the husband. From the man's side is the love. If he wants to get the love in the heart of his wife, he has to go an extra mile. A husband achieves the love in the heart of his wife by doing more than he was obliged. If you only do what you were obliged to do, you know, you're not going to earn the love that you're expecting. And so likewise, if the wife wants to get a place in the heart of the husband, she has to obey through her obedience. We earn the love in the heart. The third pillar is about the trust, which is a byproduct of our obediences and sticking to the principles. This is a very short explanation of these three pillars. The next point, bullet point, is about one of my teachers in the house. I always recall his sentence. I want to mention to you as well. He used to say, Islam is the best religion if we practice Islam fully. And Islam is the worst, quote-unquote Islam, so-called Islam, would be the worst religion if you practice it incompletely. The best examples you have in, your, in front of your eyes, all those nonsense Taliban people and so-called ISIS and all those people in Khawarij of these times, practicing Islam incompletely. So those are the poster child examples of incomplete practice, upside down practice of Islam. So that principle applies in the marriage as well. If we take some of the values and principles and apply in our everyday life, in our relationship with our spouses, it's not going to bear the desired and bring about the desired results, which we anticipate. If we want the desired results, we need to practice Islam completely. And that's how, this is one of the major reasons why the results which are mentioned in the books are not achieved in certain households, because they are doing the pick and choose policy. They are practicing certain things only of Islam and leaving the rest. Islam is a package and you cannot pick and choose. That's in the fifth bullet point, which is another very important thing, and it requires a lot of details to be elaborated as well, whenever time permits, inshallah. The sixth point is about the issue of walayat. Our religion is a religion of walayat and governance. Even if two people are traveling, hadith says, لَوْ خَرَجَ سَلَاسَةٌ فَلْيُؤَمِّرُ أَحَدَهُمْ. If three people go out, they must make one amongst them to be the leader, the commander. Our religion is a religion of leadership. When Allah assigned two angels on us, Sahib al-Yameen awla ala Sahib al-Shimal, the one on the right is having more walayat and authority upon the one over the left. So he's the leader. Even among two angels, Allah did not leave without assigning one to be the leader. Islam is a religion of walayat and leadership. So obviously there has to be some person who is, they can always discuss, husband and wife can always discuss things, but obviously the wali is the leadership phenomenon has to be positively implemented. The seventh bullet point is avoiding the abuse of walayat in the house. A husband is the wali, but it does not mean that he exercises ignorance-based policies, thus jeopardizing his status of wali and his respect in the eyes of the wife. So husband is supposedly a person who is supposed to spiritually do the tarbiyat of his wife and kids, supposedly higher in knowledge. If you are ignorant, you claim to be the leader of the house, then obviously you are talking about conflicts. You have to practically and spiritually prove to be higher when you are claiming to be the wali, and never abuse your power towards your wife or towards your children. Even if the father who's made wali by Islam for the virgin daughter, if he rejects and refuses one legitimate, Islamically parallel, how we call kuf in Arabic, hamda in Farsi, Islamically parallel proposal for his daughter. A father refuses that without a justifiable Islamic excuse. Islam says his walayat and authority will be nullified, and the virgin daughter has the right to marry that Islamically and spiritually parallel person without asking her father. So there's no room for abuse of walayat. That's the eighth important point to remember. And second last is akhlaq. Islam is a religion of morality. Morals and moral values should be governing our house. It should not be like this, hey, I'm the one having the authority, you need to listen to me. It shouldn't reach to that point. A wife is supposed to behave morally. A husband is supposed to behave morally. Let's keep our morals to a higher level. When Prophet is talking about the best, he's not talking about somebody who prays Salatul Layl, the night prayers, to be the best. He says, خَيْرُكُمْ خَيْرُكُمْ لِأَهْلِي وَأَنَا خَيْرُكُمْ لِأَهْلِي. The best among you is the one who is the best towards his family, and I'm the best among you towards my family. So, akhlaq and morals are the most iconic teachings of Islam that should be preserved in the husband-wife relationship, and no one has any right to have a bad attitude towards each other. Some people think that morals are something extra. You do it good. Even if you don't do it, that's okay. So that's not okay. The wajib teachings of morality are wajib to be performed. And the last thing I would mention before I end this short speech is that conflict resolution. We don't go to the non-Muslim court system. Jews have been going to their Judaic courts in England for centuries for their conflict resolutions. When we are in anger, when we have disputes, when we have conflicts, that's where our taqwa and fear of Allah is known. I can make a million claims, I'm such a nice mu'min. It's not going to prove that I'm nice. At the time of anger, at the time of conflict, at the time of disagreement, if I abide by the Islamic moral standards and control my anger, control my desires and egos, dragging me away from the straight path, this is what proves that I have the fear of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We don't go to the non-Muslim court system because we resolve things in a friendly and Islamic way, with the Islamic process of resolving, going to the conditions fulfilling mujtahid in the time of ghaibat, or an alim, a scholar who is competent and pious to give the verdict in the decisions, or by installing hakamain, the two people serving as judges from each side. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina wa nabiyyina Muhammadin wa alihi at-tahirin. Thank you very much.
I'm going to talk about divorce a little bit. It might have a little bit to do with marriage too, but inshallah I'm going to try to focus more on divorce. There's so much to say. I'm a little bit older than 30, and personally I have so much experience, and I've gained so much experience over the years in my own marriage. And speaking with mothers, there's so much to talk about. Some of the stuff you want to talk about has to do with the guys only. So you gotta sit the guys down, you know, buy some ice cream, and then talk to them for hours, like, this is how sisters are. This is how women think, this is how they speak. She might tell you, you never buy me anything. That's how she says it, but she doesn't mean you never bought her anything. I bought you something last week, what are you talking about? Some things we have to talk to the guys only. Sometimes there's some things we have to talk to the sisters only about guys. Sisters, the guys are like this, unfortunately, that's how God created them. So those are the specific areas. But we have more general counseling tips and pointers that apply to both. And that's what I'll try to point to, some of the things that I have here. Once again, we don't have enough time to address everything. This is not everything. There's a lot more. Don't expect to, you know, leave this workshop and feel like you now I'm gonna have a successful marriage. No. But we're gonna cover general topics that pertain to both genders. Okay, so this is our Quran Rahim. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, He sent the Quran. In it, one third of the verses are talking about not marriage, but talking about the Day of Judgment, Yawm al-Qiyamah, the hereafter, reminding us, hammering into our minds, getting this culture across to us that, listen, this life, at the end of the day, it's a bridge. I don't want to sound cliche, but it's the truth. How many of us right now have decorated our hotel rooms, right, in these 2 days that we've been here? Has anyone decorated their hotel room the 2 days that they've been here? No. If you have, you have to get your check. But because we know we're leaving here in a couple days. We're leaving in a few days. This is the culture Islam wants to get across to us as Muslims. And listen, you're crossing a bridge here. We had to bring you into this life because your perfection starts from here. Okay, so this culture Allah wants to get across to us and fix this worldview and mindset. Alright, that's on one hand. On the other hand, when we come into this life, we have means. There are things we want, there are things we need. One of them is that it has to do with marriage and sexual slash physical slash even emotional and mental needs from the opposite gender. It's not just the physical. Sometimes guys will come and say, I just want to talk to the sister. I'm not physically thinking about anything. I'm like, still, that's part of it. You're supposed to even be mentally and emotionally drawn towards the opposite gender. Nice try, but that even doesn't count either. You gotta get married, right? Some guys, that's how they look at it. Anyway. So we get married. Marriage happens. This sacred institution of marriage. Okay. Then problems start coming up. We have a little line in Farsi. Love was easy at first, but dang. The dang part I put in there. But dang. There's so many problems now. So many problems come up after love. Now, of course, that line is an Irfani mystical line. That has to do with love of Allah, but we can relate to it somewhat in our own lives and marriages and so on. So, problems start coming up. What's the problem usually, brothers and sisters, is the fact that either we don't understand the Islamic view of marriage. Like, what is exactly, what do we after when we get married, right? What does Islam look at marriage as? First, let me give you an example. Some guys out there in the West, Western Americans, they'll tell you, I didn't get married to her body, I got married to her soul. So you gotta hold on to the guys who didn't bring them down from the heavens and be like, no, you didn't get married just to her soul. It's physical and it's both. Some people go that far, some people they go the opposite. We have to first understand like what marriage is about, okay? What parts of marriage have been highlighted Islamically. And it's interesting, if we do that, you'll see a lot of difference between the Islamic perspective and the Western perspective. One of the problems is that, another problem that usually all of the problems of marriage go back to is just that culture, that worldview. The way we're supposed to look at life, it hasn't seeped in, we haven't absorbed it, it hasn't become one with us. The way we're supposed to look at this life. Lots of the problems you notice with some of the very good brothers out there, sisters out there, religious, recites Quran a lot, but it hasn't seeped in because they're living in a society like this. You feel like the problems that they are stating and listing for you has to do with the fact that they feel that they're going to be living in this world forever. And to give in their defense, if we were to live in this life forever, those problems that they have are actually problems. I'll get to those, inshallah. So take a rain check on that. In a nutshell, Islam has this approach, the Western, let's not say Western, let's say the secular, it might even be in the Middle East, it might even be in a Muslim country, that secular perspective is the total opposite. And that eats away. I'm going to call it, but I'm not going to call it, American Islam. And I always have to explain, after I say this word, American Islam, I have to explain, not Islam that's in America is that. No, American Islam, when they say this term, it means that secular approach to religion and understanding of religion. A person who has an Islam like this will struggle in their marriage, probably, if those little problems come up. And vice versa holds as well. If a person has that Islamic culture, no matter where they live, whatever happens, these problems will cease slowly, and this has been seen and experienced. So a few points that I just want to share, and then you'll see how each of these points and problems goes back to either one of these two. Not understanding the approach to marriage, and how we're supposed to look at marriage, or because we just don't have that worldview that we're supposed to have, that Qur'anic and ukhrawi, hereafterish worldview. So point number one, usually you see that there are differences amongst the couple goes back to the fact that they don't share the same worldview. Sister has a good worldview, Quranic worldview, the other one doesn't, man doesn't have it. So here I just have to point this out, brothers and sisters, try not to fall in love. Because once you fall in love with someone, it blinds us, it deafens us, and we don't think straight anymore. You have to understand that when you get married, after a while you'll become normal to each other. That's when the ideologies have to match, or else if the ideologies don't match, major problems will come up. So for those of you who are still single, keep this in mind, that if you're gonna fall in love with someone, which that shouldn't really happen, but before marriage, but if you are going to follow someone, try to follow someone who has that same ideology as you, or else other problems will come up. So a question here arises. You'll say, well, we're already married. We're already married, and we don't have the same worldview. I made the mistake, I married someone that doesn't have the same worldview. Should I get divorced? Not necessarily. It depends. This is a case-dependent issue. You have to get counseling on it. Sometimes the guy is not abusive, he has good akhlaq, everything, he's providing for the family, he's not lazy, he's a man. Okay? But he's not practicing, or he doesn't share the same worldview as you. Well, here, if you're getting along and you have your children, he's not against Islam or anything, he doesn't have a problem, not necessarily does that mean that divorce has to happen. Okay, just because two arguments over religiosity and religion happens, not necessarily. I'm not saying yes or no. This is something that's case dependent. We have to refer to someone who is qualified and seek a consultation on that. So that's one question that I thought that needs to be addressed. Point number two has to do with, once again, our approach to marriage now. So point number one had to do with worldview. You see how that problem went back, it was rooted in worldview. Point number two has to do with our understanding of marriage. So we're living in the West. I'm going to say two things. One, beware of the white horse. And two, beware of the L word. And what am I referring to? The white horse represents that mentality that the sky will open up, and a white Pegasus with a prince or a princess will come down, and it will be written on the forehead of this horse that this is the one. And an arrow, there will be an arrow on it, or maybe a unicorn with it. Pointing to its rider, saying that this is the one for you. I found him or her, alhamdulillah. The L word, same thing. So you all know this in the Western culture, to a boy and a girl, like she says to him or he says to her, I love you. The woman was like, oh, don't say that. Love is something, you know, we have to live in an apartment together for 20 years, then I can tell if I love you or not. What is wrong with you people? The L word, where does this come from? It comes from a misunderstanding of marriage. What is marriage? Marriage is commitment. So if I'm going to be committed to someone, I better make sure that I find a person, and you hear this, you see this, on their TV shows you see this. I want to make sure I find someone, and let me know if I go over my time. Find someone that I will never ever think about anyone else, ever again, after I get married to this person. Am I right or not? We have this out there. That's why if I'm going to love someone, the L word, astaghfirullah, I have to make sure that he's the one that came from the heavens, or she's the one that came from up there. That when I am with them, I don't love anyone. I could care less about anyone anymore. It's that non-Islamic approach and understanding of marriage. I'm sorry, my friends. We are here to be tested. Theologically, that's not possible. That through marriage, the whole test of being attracted to other people goes to the side. What, you just took one of God's quote-unquote weapons from Him for testing us, for us to grow in the face of these tests. No, my friend, you get married, you'll be attracted to a million other people. Get this, we have to get this out of our heads. Yes, I'm not trying to say that we have to be perverted now, a little bit. No, that's not what I mean. But this ideology, this mentality, so that when it does happen, that all of a sudden a married man, a married woman, does feel a little more attracted to someone else. They feel like there's something wrong with their marriage. No, no, there's nothing wrong with your marriage. There's something wrong with your understanding of marriage. That's not supposed to happen. No matter where, how you go up and down in the hadith, in the Quran, you will never find that marriage equals something that when you engage in it, you will forget all of the world. That's the first 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, 1 year maybe, at most. So this misunderstanding of marriage. It's unfortunate that we find that the same problems that the non-Muslims have when it comes to marriage, and it causes divorces, you find the same things in our Muslim brothers and sisters. And this is because we're living in this society, and we're being bombarded by this poisonous culture that goes against Islamic culture. All right. Okay, I'll rush through it. Marriage, just like everything else, marriage itself is also a test. So Munad went into the famous hadith, we've all heard it. You secure half of your religion through marriage, right? We have to understand, and this is also point number three, is also rooted in that misunderstanding of what marriage is all about. It goes like this, that marriage itself becomes a test after a while. Why? Half of your religion is secure, but what about the other half? There's two major drives in man and woman. One is, of course, shahwa, those carnal desires, if we're going to call it anything, those sexual desires. Another one is ghadab, wrath, anger. So before marriage, we have this problem of, you know, the needs, the urges. You get married, those are satisfied to an extent. What do you think? Allah brought you here so that there's no tests? Marriage itself becomes a test. All of a sudden, after a while, it's no more love, I love you, and you know, I sent you this heart, and you sent me that bunny, and a picture of this, and a butterfly, and all that. No, it's not like that anymore. We're getting into arguments. We're getting into fights. Marriage itself is a test. That second half, this is my understanding. I'm just saying this is not in a hadith or anything, but maybe. The other half now comes with a ghadab. Sometimes in marriages, people get so angry that, I mean, for them, everything is to just sit her down. And then you see that this ends in divorce, just so that she can shut her up, make her feel the pain and anger that she gave him. Oh, this is Islamically, when you look at it, marriage means, okay, you're taking care of one problem, another problem comes up, that's part of the deal, that's part of the growth. You took care of one problem, now Allah's going to send you another problem that you have to cope with, you have to deal with. We have to understand that anger is a means of our growth. But we're not supposed to let it reach that level that we lose our aql, because when we lose our aql in anger, you can't do anything anymore. You'll do something that's haram, you move, you lose. What we have to do is, before we get angry, if any time it happens, that we get angry, we do something we weren't supposed to do. All right, now this is one of those weapons Shaitan used against me. Her mother, his mother, my mother-in-law, that's one of them. Okay, I have to sit down later and think about it. Go over what happened, make sure I don't repeat it next time. This is what Allah wants from you. Think over these scenarios that come up in your life. These are Shaitan's weapons, one after another. Once you see it, don't get shot by it again. At least we have to manage. Anger management becomes easier the more you practice it. The first time is hard, second time a little easier, third time a little easier. It's like a muscle. You think all these muscular people were born muscular? No. There's a little muscle fiber, he works it, practices it, trains it, it grows a little more, a little more. First time it's going to be hard, second time a little easier, third time a little easier, it goes like that. That's how taqwa works. You have to, when you get angry, get up and leave. The ulama, one of them, he would say, the lips don't have bones in them. Why? There's a reason for this. When you get angry, squeeze this mouth like this, and you just don't say anything. Because when you open this, this will get you into the hellfire. Close it and leave. And I promise you, 30 minutes later, that couple that wanted their each other's head, all of a sudden they're in love again. It's like a workout. It's burning when you're pumping the iron, but after that you feel good. It's growth. You sense the growth. Okay, there's a lot more stuff here to say, but I think I've gone over my time. So, I got 3 minutes. Okay. And I always say this, that brothers and sisters, marriage is an akhlaq class. All those people who want to go up in the love of Allah and spirituality, and they think they do it in the center, and they do it because of their salat and all that, of course these play a role. One of the greatest means of akhlaq and spiritual growth is that spouse that sometimes you get into an argument, sometimes you get angry now. The most spiritual growth happens in the homes. There's stories about the ulama, Maraja, he's walking, his students are following him after class, he gets home, the wife comes out. Now, I'm not trying to hate on the women, but sometimes the guys are like this. But anyway, in this story, the wife comes out, she starts abusing him verbally in front of his students, this is Ayatollah. And to the extent that his students want to do something about it, he's like, whoa, wait a minute, no, if I have anything spiritually, it's because of her. Now, I'm not trying to say now go get married to the worst of the worst because you want to grow spiritually. Don't worry, the tests will come. We're not supposed to go after them. We're supposed to be ready for them, inshallah. Okay, point number four. Point number four has a little more to do with the guys and the sisters as well. Be very, very careful. Don't get yourself into trouble. Before you get yourself into trouble, I'll explain what I mean. Get in the way of it. What do I mean? Guys, a little bit more have to be careful about this. Brothers and sisters, this problem is rooted in our worldview now. We haven't cultivated that worldview within us. That this world is going to end. Brothers and sisters, everything in this life is not for us. Every billboard out there is not for us to look at. Every person out there is not for us to speak to. Every coworker out there is not for us to get intimate with and close to and, you know, opposite gender. Sometimes, and we've seen this, brothers or sisters that are religious, once they become a little more successful in life, in their profession, in their professions and careers, and they have co-workers and so on, you will notice that sometimes they will get closer to some people. Don't even do that. Because once you get close and a little bit of affection comes in, it's going to be hard to fight it. It's going to grow. Once the love comes for someone else, whoever it is, you won't be able to think straight anymore. If you respect yourselves, if we respect ourselves, we won't even let step one happen. Not everything out there is for us. Yes, if we were to live in this world forever, I wouldn't be here, guys. If we were to live here forever, I would get bored of her. She would get bored of me. This flaw, that flaw, I don't want to put up with this forever. There is no such thing as forever in this life, brothers and sisters. It's 50, 60, 70 years. We're supposed to put up. There is no perfect out there. Put up, of course, there are some problems that we have to address. Just because there's another one that's better looking doesn't mean that's for me. You like it? Say, Allah, I'll take a rain check on this one. I'll see her there, or him there, on the other side. Excuse my, the way I'm putting it. Okay, when it comes to these family affairs, you gotta... And finally, to say this, that brothers and sisters, counseling is very important. And especially the brothers, some of them, they have this data, they have this pride, that it just doesn't allow them to get counseling. Counseling doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. Counseling is that you need to be reminded of certain things. Sometimes I'm counseling someone, then I have to be reminded of certain things. It's mutual, that we have to help each other out, inshallah. This is also something that shouldn't be taboo. I'm sorry if I went over my time. This is salawat.
We're going to open up the floor to question and answers. I'm going to ask Sister Amira, who without her during this workshop would come off, to carry the microphone. So if you have a question, please raise your hand. If you don't want to ask it in public, very quickly write it on a piece of paper, send it to her, and we'll send it to her.
Is there something which you can call it like a happy divorce if there are children involved? Let's say you reach a point where differences are irreconcilable and, you know, despite all the efforts that have been made, you know, you will decide to part your way. Divorce can be very, very painful, but it can be devastating if there are young children involved. So, if you all, either Morana Adia or Morana Sani, can reflect on this point, and maybe, you know, maybe that may help some situations. If not.
So what I couldn't understand from your question is that are you talking about in the case of divorce, how we are supposed to proceed forward, or what, how to contain the divorce? Where divorce has already happened, unfortunately in our society, a lot of cases that I'm dealing with, things have gone to a very bad level. No talking terms. One person doesn't say salam to each other. One person doesn't respond back. No contacts. 350 yards restrictions from the court, one person takes away the kids, and so on and so forth. So much, you know, unpleasant things have happened. Much water has passed under the bridge, which is, I would say, un-Islamic, because Quran talked about فَإِمْسَاكُمْ بِمَعْرُوفِ أَوْ تَسْرِيحٌ بِإِحْسَانٍ. There are only two policies mentioned in Quran. Either you keep your wife with you know, ma'ruf and goodness, or you set her free with ihsan and doing good behavior towards her. So divorces should happen with goodness. A lot of cases are not happening like this. Islamically speaking, the wife obviously becomes non-mahram after the iddat wedding period expires. During the waiting period, she is mahram to the husband. Husband has a right to turn back to her if it was a regular divorce, which we call talaqun rij'i. If it was a khula, then he won't get back to her. No. And if the wife dies during the waiting period, her sustenance is wajib on the husband during the waiting period. Even if a wife dies, her kafan is wajib on the husband to pay for. The fitrah of the wife is wajib on the husband during the waiting period. After the waiting period ends, they are non-mahrams again. children. If it's a boy, the wife has the right to raise haqqul hidana, how we call it in our fiqh. The wife has the right to raise the son for 2 years. And if it's a daughter, she has a right to raise the daughter for 7 years. And after that, the children will go back to the father. The mother and the father both have the right to see and meet with their kids anytime they want. Usually, this is not what is happening in our societies, unfortunately. But Islamically, no husband can block the wife who he divorced from meeting the children anytime she wants. And respect needs to be maintained. Dignity of each other has to be maintained. Disrespectful words should not be said to anyone against each other. Things which are related to zulm, someone did something against me, I have a right to say that much, nothing more, not even a word more than that. And keeping the faults or the defects or the shortcomings which the rest of the society or the relatives and the friends do not know, they are supposed to put a curtain, keep a covering, keep on hiding the shortcomings, defects and faults of each other, which husband and wife know about each other, should never share to anybody after the divorce. But these moral standards you rarely find in our everyday life. In so many cases, unfortunately, these things are not practiced, and obviously it backfires us big time, because Allah has His own ways of punishing us. If we don't realize and behave well in a nice way, we get punished in alternate ways.
You have a written question here, Surajit. How do we deal with obeying the husband when we know he is making a wrong decision? Well, usually that's the case. Like, we think that he's wrong, she thinks that she's wrong. So maybe you might be wrong, but let's just say that you're right and he's wrong. Well, there is only so much you can do for the wife, of course. I mean, you try to explain, and I'm assuming that you tried that already. Try to get someone else, at least, that he believes in, you know, and he looks up to try to explain. If that doesn't work, then if it's something that he has a right over and you don't have a right over, then you can't. I mean, there's nothing you can really do. I mean, you tried your best. But if it's something that he doesn't have a right over and it's your right, then no, of course, you don't have to listen. But you see what the question was, how do we deal with, for example, he says, it's spend your money like this. You don't have to listen. I mean, you have to explain to them that this is my money, for example. Or if he doesn't listen to you, have someone who is an authority to explain. But there's only so much you can do. I mean, this is something we have to build, like, a little bit. It's not something overnight that I'm going to explain to him, and he has to listen. Throughout life, we have to prove to each other that we want the best for each other. And that when I propose something to you, or I go against something, at least honor that with some contemplation, consideration. I want you to consider it at least. This is something that happens not overnight, but it happens after a while. Inshallah, you reach that point where you'll see that, oh, she was right that time, she was right this time, the next time, she was right the last 10 times. Of course, I don't say go to him every time he makes a mistake, like, see, I told you. That's going to ruin it more. That's not good. I hate it when they do that. Okay? So, lots of times the sister is right, but very respectfully, let them know that, listen, see, this is what I thought, and it turned out to be wrong. Slowly, slowly, with respect, at least try to build him in a way, or her in a way, that they understand that, oh, he can also be right, she can also be right. I should at least consider, I should consult.
Question is, what about polygamy? Is it wajib? Viable option in marriage? We all know that Islamic law allows four wives, but we live in America, we respect the law for that, and we don't do that. So, Islamic law has its own conditions as well. There are some people who take certain laws as a given thing and ignore the conditions. That's not the way it works. Even in the Islamic perspective, when a this permission was there, is there in Islam. It has its own conditions of life, and most importantly, about the justice of the person. The secular world around us has been promoting pleasure without responsibility. Isn't that right? So you seek the pleasure from non-mahram person, pay certain amount of money without any further responsibility towards the medical expenses, the shelter, the house, the food, etc., etc., of that person. You don't want to bear any of those things and responsibility. You just want to get the pleasure, pay certain money without, you know, taking any responsibility towards that person. Whereas the Islamic law had conditions when this thing was, you know, you have to take the responsibility. You need to be a responsible person to be able to maintain in a justful and fair way, taking care of all the rights of each individual properly, without negligence, without a slight discrimination. So the laws are not explained in the Western media intentionally, because they have an agenda. If you explain the whole, if you learn the whole context, then you will realize the wisdom behind the rulings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Even for temporary marriage, there are some people who believe it's a license for men to do whatever, isn't it right? And you know, that's not the case. That's not the case. And everything has certain conditions involved, which are ignored by some people. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has said to two of his companions in Medina, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam was a resident of Medina, and he said to two of his companions, you know, قَدْ حَرَّمْتُ عَلَيْكُمَ الْمُطْعَةَ مَا دُنْتُمَا بِالْمَدِينَ. I made mut'a haram upon you as long as you two are in the city of Medina. لِأَنَّكُمَا تَكْسُرَانِ الدُّخُولَ عَلَيَّ فَأَخَافُ أَن تُؤَخَذَا فَيُقَالْ هَقُلَاتَ أَصْحَابُ جَعْفَرَ. I am afraid that, so because you guys keep on, you know, coming over, visiting me on and off, and I'm afraid you would be held accountable. See, these are the companions of Ja'far ibn Muhammad al-Sadiq, and look what they are doing. So, doing something in an undignified way. Dignity and izzat and sharaf and nobility comes first. So let's remember, there's nothing without certain conditions, which are ignored by some people. So in the secular world, they promoted, you know, promiscuous behavior, reckless behavior, one woman can have relations with hundreds of people, and that's okay. One man can marry four men, have relationship with four men of the same gender, and that's okay. Isn't that right? And when Islam was talking about a relationship based on taking full, sensible, justful responsibility without any slightest discrimination, that was totally rejected. And the humanity is paying the price to whatever extent it backfires us. So, thank you.